The Taoiseach, Simon Harris, has told the Dáil that he doesn't believe a referendum is necessary to change what's known as the triple lock. That's the process which governs the deployment of Irish troops overseas. However, Paul Murphy of Solidarity People Before Profit said the result of the presidential election showed that the majority of Irish people wanted to retain the triple lock. Meanwhile, Ukraine's Deputy Foreign Minister, who's on a visit here, has told a conference that while he wouldn't tell Ireland what to do on security, he believed neutrality was a thing of the past. I asked Sergei Kislytsia who he was meeting and what he would be telling them.
Well, first of all, I'm very interested to listen because Ireland is a very interesting country in many respects. Ireland is a member of the European Union. Ireland is a neutral country. Ireland acutely understands that traditional neutrality is something that is at least worth discussing or looking at given what's going on in Europe. And I also always use an opportunity to express our profound gratitude to the Irish people and Irish government for welcoming and hosting a good number of Ukrainian refugees in this country.
You're quoted as telling a meeting yesterday that neutrality is a thing of the past. What did you mean by that?
Well, first of all, I have to say from the very outset, I am not to tell the Irish people how to run their business. But I think that if we look at several neutral countries around Europe, Finland, Sweden, Austria, Switzerland, Ireland, I think that they have undergone a profound shock followed by a very radical review of their defense and security posture. If we look at Finland, for example, that used to be very hardcore neutral country, after the invasion of 2022, the sentiments of population had changed dramatically. Before the invasion, 60% of the Finns were against NATO membership. After the invasion, 90% of Finns were in favor of the membership that ensured a very fast accession to NATO. One thing that the Irish may need to be reminded is that while being neutral, all those years, Finland was spending lots of money on the security side and defense, because they knew very well, including based on their history, that if you want to be neutral, you have to be strong. What used to be a significant advantage, like geographical position and distance from the major centers of conflicts, today may be quite a disadvantage. Because in today's world, you don't really need to have foreign boots on the ground to be invaded. The attacks by the enemies can be launched in the cyberspace. And even the most advanced countries can be put on their knees before the governments even realize where those attacks come from.
And yet I'm sure you're aware that opinion polls here continue to show massive support for Ireland's neutrality. I think in the last poll it was about 75%. So are people wrong in your view?
You know, I've been reading various pieces of news coming from Ireland in the recent months. And in fact, that's something that I can reply by putting a question to yourself. Because if I look, for example, the poll conducted by Eurobarometer in September this year, they say that Ireland is second out of 27 members, believing the role of the European Union in protecting citizens against global crisis and security risk should become more important, and that some 83% of Irish people agreed with this, compared to 68% of the EU citizens on average.
Mm-hmm.
So my question to you, if I may, does this figure reflect on understanding, reflect on awareness of the magnitude of threat and the preference of looking at the EU, that the EU should take care of the Irish security? Or does it reflect on the need to be more engaged by this or another way in the joint European efforts to protect the European Union as a whole? It's a very difficult question, but I think that, once again, it's not my job to tell the Irish people what to do. I think it is a clear responsibility of the Irish politicians to have a meaningful dialogue with their constituents so that the Irish people themselves can assess the realities of the 21st century.
Ireland has given what's called non-lethal military support to Ukraine. Are you asking the government here for additional support?
Yes, we do ask not only the Irish government, but many friendly governments around the world. And one thing that every Irish taxpayer should know is that we really do appreciate every cent spent on Ukraine's defense. But that assistance, I would dare to say, is not a charity business, because it is Ukraine that defends the border of civilized Europe in the face of the real, not imaginary threat. And as long as Ukraine and Ukrainian soldiers are able to defend this front line, the less is probability that Europeans should need to take arms in their own hands to defend their own well-being and territories.
There are reports that Ukraine could be facing its biggest military loss for months in the city of Pavrovsk. I was reading those this morning. How serious a setback would that be?
It is a very dramatic moment currently, with the majority of daily attacks, 100 and more attacks taking place at that direction. The Ukrainians still control Pokrovsk, and I'm sure that we still have enough forces to control Pokrovsk. I mean, like many cities around that area, and especially in the east of Ukraine, Pokrovsk is not a city anymore. It's just a name on the map. The nature of the Russian invasion, which they called oftentimes liberation, is that they raise the cities, towns, and villages to the ground. So the importance of defending Donetsk as a whole is that it is the most fortified part of the front line. I need to tell your listeners that in spite of all Russian propaganda, the Russians managed in the last year occupy about 1% of Ukrainian territory. With this space, they would need decades, if not a century, to occupy Ukraine. And the fact that they cannot make major advancement on the in the field makes them especially angry and makes them use the airstrikes more often. There are nights when they would use up to 800, 1,000 UAVs and hundreds of missiles. So the magnitude of their airstrikes is incredible.
There is, though, I think, an international perception at the moment that efforts to end the war have stalled. Is that the case?
No, the efforts to end the war are ongoing. And Ukraine works very hard on a daily basis with its partners and allies. The context and negotiations that are taking place between the president and his counterparts, the foreign minister, the NSA's national security advisors, are daily.
So contacts are taking place all the while?
All the time. And we will have a coalition willing meeting on Friday. And there was one on Monday, and the plans and the convergence of the positions of various allies and partners is more prominent.
One thing that did change recently was Ukraine changed its policy so that young men were allowed to leave the country. Now, as you know, a significant number have travelled to Ireland. Why was it decided to make that policy change?
You know, they are allowed to leave between the age of 18 and, although of course they can travel with their parents before the age of 18. The mandatory conscription age is 25. So before they reach this age, they with another 7 years, right? And as citizens of Ukraine, they have the right to travel, they have the right to get education, and I frankly hope, and I not only hope, I understand that this war cannot last another 7, 5, 4, or even 3 years. We have to put the end to this war long before that, right? And in spite of all the hardships, believe it or not, Ukraine is a very particular society where politicians are very dependent on public opinion, and they are very sensitive to public opinion. There are many women, there are many mothers who live abroad and who haven't seen their sons, young sons, for years.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying then that there was a big demand for this change so that young men would be able to leave?
Yes. I haven't heard any criticism. Of course, I mean, given the plurality of opinions, you can find whatever opinion in the media in Ukraine, but it has never reached the point of discontent, even from the part of the Ukrainian armed forces or soldiers, because most of them, especially people in their 40s and then their 50s, they have their sons, they have their mothers, they have their wives. And you can understand that if a given family is separated for years, it causes a detrimental effect on the ability of the family to stay together. And we hope then when our soldiers are decommissioned and when they are reunited with their families, that the majority of those families will stay together.
Just finally, in that regard, there are at least 80,000 refugees from Ukraine living in Ireland. Do you expect that a significant amount will decide to stay here?
I think that the Ukrainians, as well as the Irish, as well as some other nationalities like Poles, for example, are very attached to their fatherland. And Ukrainians are free to travel and free to decide where they want to live. But I can assume that an important percentage of Ukrainians will go back to Ukraine, provided that there are security conditions that allow them to come back. Ukrainians are very entrepreneurial. Ukrainians will leave where there is security, where there are business opportunities, where their families are safe, and where they can feel themselves. And I'm sure that the Irish are happy in the United States, but they are more comfortable in Ireland. You know, the same goes about the Ukrainians. And if we speak about the perspective of the EU membership of Ukraine, the borders will be open anyway. So I think that we should look at the Ukrainians who live in Ireland as an incredible opportunity for Ireland, and especially for the Irish business, to train the future ambassadors of Ireland, so that the people who come back to Ukraine after years in Ireland, they would not only bring the good memories about Irish culture, Irish friends, but they would also bring the experience of how to deal with Irish business. And they will be these bridges between Ireland and Ukraine. So if we look at this problem through these optics, I think it is more positive and more encouraging.
And that was Ukraine's Deputy Foreign Minister, Sergei Kislytsia, who's in Dublin today.